Hello, everyone. Good evening. What kind of king is the series we are in? What kind of king? You know, what is Jesus like? I don't know what you think Jesus is like, or maybe you've heard a bit about Jesus and you're wondering, you know, what was he like? What I've discovered over the last 5 years of knowing Jesus is that you know and love what you have been held by. Let me say that again. You know and love what you have been held by. And I've discovered over the 5 years that Jesus has held me. He's looked after me. I mean, things haven't always been a success, but things have always been good. He's always worked things out. He has held me. And I've discovered that in him holding me, I've got to know him better. And I've just loved him even more. I remember this time I went out to Japan a couple of years ago, and it was a real joy to be out there. But when I was out there, I always was invited to things that I didn't really know what I was going to. So I spent the whole time wondering, you know, what am I going to next? And I met this guy called David, and he picked me up one morning, and we drove for 3 hours across Tokyo. And there's about 30 plus million people there. This is a big city, and we're going to this one high school, and we arrive at this high school, okay, and I've never been to this high school before, and I don't even know what I'm doing with David there. It's the first time he's been as well, but we kind of know that we're doing something with the kids, and so we arrive on time, and we get in this classroom. The classroom was not big. It could fit like 20 people in, and we were the only two people there, and then people started to arrive, and they looked like teachers because they weren't young, and they started to arrive. And then this one guy came in who was Japanese, and everyone stood up. And I thought, okay, so he must be important. And he gave, see, the school was a Christian school. And so he gave this little message. And then someone started to play a guitar. And then for 30 minutes, we started to worship Jesus. And I, most of it was in Japanese. So I did not have a clue what was being said, but I kind of worked out what songs they were doing, especially when they did Amazing Grace. I kind of worked out that this was the song. But I was just blown away, and I just sat there the whole time. I can't believe I'm here. And I can't believe these guys do this every single morning before the kids come. They worship together. It was such a joy. A friend called Newton, he's a friend at college. He invited me and 3 others to go to his house. Well, we thought we were going to his house. He said, come around, meet my family. And so he's from Zimbabwe. And so he's like, come to my church. And so we come and we realize, yeah, he wanted us to go to his church. We thought we were just meeting his family, because we go into this hall and there's just loads of African people there. And I'm like, okay, this is what we're going to. And we all sit down and we have food, and it's amazing. I mean, the food was awesome. And then Newton's sitting next to me near the end of the meal. He said, Nick, you're going to bring a word from God. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, you're going to bring a word from God. And without even letting me respond, he got up and just says, brothers, sisters, an amazing brother in Christ. And he's just going to share something from God. And my friends who I was with, they were so close to bursting out laughing. And I'm like, okay, what did I read in the morning devotions? Okay, I'll just share that passage. And I thought I got away with it. And then one guy at the back goes, so how do you discipline your young people at your youth group? I'm like, oh no. You know, and then they started asking me parenting questions. And if you know me, I don't have any kids. And it's a really, if you want to know if God's good, he's good because he hasn't allowed me to have kids. I mean, I would not look after kids well. And so I'm in this situation. I just couldn't believe I was there. And throughout these 5 years, I discovered that Jesus has constantly held me. He's constantly looked after me. But you see, sometimes our experiences can let us down. This guy called Blaise Pascal, he said, God created man in his own image, and man returned the favor. Meaning that we can project our own image, our own experiences on Jesus, and we think that he's going to respond in this sort of way, or he's going to be like this, he's going to give me this or that. And what Pascal says is actually, you know, we should actually allow Jesus to dictate, tell us what he's like. And so we need to go to where we find Jesus, and we find him in the Gospels. their accounts of his life. If you want to get to know Katie or Jason or myself, you need to hang out with us. You need to spend time with us to get to know us. And that's the same with Jesus. Not only do you need to spend time with him in your life, but you need to go to where it's written about him, where people spent physical time with him. And so we're in this amazing passage in the Gospel of Mark. So if you've got a Bible, turn to chapter 5, verses 21 to 43. If not, there's Bibles down here, so do grab one. You're going to need it tonight because we're going to look at a really cool story and you're going to have to follow with me. Fantastic. So that's Mark chapter 5, verses 23 to 43. And it says this: when Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Now just imagine, you're at your high school. If you're a little bit older, just go back to when you were at high school. And a celebrity came in, maybe someone like Taylor Swift. Okay, she arrived in your reception. Imagine that. Or if you don't like Taylor Swift, I don't know, pick another celebrity, but I'm rolling with Taylor Swift. She turns up and someone notices her, okay? And they run over to her, probably got a selfie with her. But then someone else notices her, but tells other people, hey, Taylor Swift's here. And then a crowd starts to gather. And this crowd gets bigger and bigger, and people start to join the crowd, not because they know, you know, who's in the middle, but there's just a crowd and they just want to be part of the crowd. They want to know what's going on. You see, that was the case for Jesus. He had this reputation and people, whenever he turned up, wanted to gather around him. They wanted to see Jesus. And we read this: then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. Just imagine your head teacher seeing that crowd. A man of good reputation or woman, probably wearing a suit, someone you look up to, running, pushing people out of the crowd and falling at Taylor Swift's feet. Just imagine that. How strange that would be. I think a lot of you would be like, did we just see that? You see, this is how odd it is for Jairus to do this. He is a man of great reputation. He's a man who everyone in that area would know because he's a ruler of the synagogue, just like a pastor of a church. He had a great reputation. And that act of falling down at the feet of Jesus, really, he was giving that reputation up. Because Jesus, for the synagogue leaders, was not someone to get to know. He wasn't someone they actually liked. In fact, we see that the synagogue leaders get Jesus crucified. They weren't into this man because this man was popular. He was liked by the people. And so for Jairus to actually go down and fall at his feet, he's risking everything. And so it begs the question, why? Why does he do that? Why would he make such a fool of himself? And so we read this: he pleaded with Jesus, my little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live. The idea of meeting Taylor Swift may excite you, but she is no good to you if your daughter is dying, or your brother, or your mother, or your loved one is dying. You would not seek Taylor Swift if someone was dying in your family. You see, Jesus for Jairus is not seen as a local celeb or a moral teacher. He's seen as the one who can heal his daughter. He's left his dying daughter behind to find Jesus. You only do that if you believe that he can heal his daughter. He's a desperate man. In the hour of need, where do you go to? Where do you go for help when you are ill, or when you know someone's ill, or even someone who's dying? Who do you go to? Jairus knew who he had to go to. he went to Jesus. And Jesus says to him, because his request was, you know, can you come with me? And so Jesus went with him. In verse 24, it says, so Jesus went with him. Jesus is like, yes, I'm happy to go with you to your house to heal your daughter. And so off they go. They head off and the crowd follows them. We read this. It says, a large crowd followed and pressed around him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. See, this crowd has followed Jesus, and this woman who has been ill for 12 years, and let me tell you, they didn't have antibiotics. There was no sort of pain relief. She was in pain for 12 years, and she has tried every measure to get healed. She's gone to every doctor. No one could help her, and she would have been shunned by the community. She would have, no one wanted to know her. So you can just imagine her sitting in the marketplace or in the streets, and she's hearing all this commotion. And maybe even weeks before, she heard about this Jesus, this one who was healing people. And so she's realized, this is my chance. He's arrived. He's turned up. He's come. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touched his clothes, I would be healed. Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. See, her hope was to be healed without having a relationship with Jesus. She just wanted to go up to him and just touch him. And then she could just slip away and live a life without suffering. And when she did that, she touched his... Jesus realized that someone has just got healed. And so he says this, who touched my clothes? And I don't know about you, but that sounds stupid. She says, who touched my clothes? Jesus and his disciples realize this. They say, Jesus, you're in a crowd. I don't know if you've ever been on the underground and rush hour. You'd be pretty stupid to say, who touched me? Who touched me? Everyone's touching you. You're in a crowd, Jesus. His disciples are saying, come on, let's get going. There's a daughter. She's dying. People have touched you. But Jesus is not asking the question of his disciples. He's not even asking it of the crowd. He's asking it of the person who's just got healed. He's saying, who touched me? Is it you? Who touched me? He's talking to the lady. Because Jesus is interested in who she is. He's not just interested in healing her, but he wants to know her. He wants to know who she is. Jesus is interested in relationships. He's interested in knowing people. And so we read this. Then the woman, knowing what had happened, came and fell at his feet, trembling with fear. Isn't that interesting? She's just been healed and she's trembling with fear. She's fearful of Jesus. And she told him the whole truth. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. She had faith in Jesus that he could heal her. Jesus was the object of her faith. She did not put her faith in the idea of healing. She put her faith in the one who could heal. And Jesus called her daughter. That's just remarkable. He says, daughter, when you come to know Jesus, when you put your faith in him, he knows you as either a son or a daughter. And he says to her, go in peace. Go in peace. And I think right now, Jairus, he's still there, by the way. He hasn't left anywhere. I think he's thinking, oh, yes, I've got the right guy. You know, he's just healed this woman. Oh, man, this is going to be good. I've got him. He's definitely the right guy. Didn't get mixed up. You know, it was the right Jesus. He's just seen this amazing healing. I mean, there was a lot of people called Jesus, you see, back then. So I'm sure he's thinking, yes, got the right one. But before they can move on, we read this. Whilst Jesus was still speaking, so he's still speaking to the lady, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. Your daughter is dead. Your daughter is dead, Jairus. I remember the day when I was 10. It was just before Christmas, and I turned 10 in September. And I was sitting on my neighbor's sofa, and my mum came in, and I was with a friend. And I knew the news wasn't good. You just know when someone's got bad news. And she said to me, Nick, your brother's just died. And all I could do was just bury my head in the sofa and cried for a long time. I just wanted to get my head right in that sofa and not see anyone. And the reason why I share that is because some of you here, you've may have had that news when a loved one has died and someone tells you and you hear it for the first time. And you never forget that moment. And the reason why I share this is because let's not miss what Jairus has just heard. The emotions that this guy is going through right now. His daughter has just died. The hope for healing has just slipped away. He's just seen Jesus heal someone, and now it's all gone. And maybe the questions start to come, the what if questions. What if this woman just didn't touch Jesus? We would have got there in time. You know, what if Jesus just said to her, look, lady, can I come back to you? I mean, you've been ill for a long time, but you're not dying. Maybe he's asking himself, if only I just said, Jesus, could you heal her from afar and not come to my house? Maybe doubt and even regret starts to come into his mind. And then his friends say this. They say to him, let's go. Let's leave Jesus. Why bother? Why bother? She's died. And Jesus overhears this. And he says this. He says, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid, Jairus. Just believe. And I was talking to David about this passage, and I said, David, I'm just struggling with that. Do you hear what Jesus just said to a guy who has just lost his daughter? Don't be afraid. Just believe. Can you imagine saying that to someone in that moment? Sounds so insensitive, doesn't it? But then I started to realize what he doesn't say. He doesn't say, don't be sad. He doesn't say, don't grieve. He doesn't say, don't care about the situation. But he says, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Do you know why, Jairus? Because I'm still with you. I haven't left. I'm still here. Jairus thought Jesus could heal, but Jesus has another plan. He's not left the story. So they head off. He did not let anyone follow him, except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. I don't know. By the way, when you read the Bible, there's some real comical moments, and I love this bit. He did not let anyone follow except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, just in case you wanted to know which John it was. Because there was a lot of Johns, and so we need to know that it's the John, the brother of James. But here's the problem. There's probably a lot of Jameses as well, so I thought you need to kind of tell us who the brother of James is as well. But anyway, that's a little aside there. Anyway, so they head off, and we read this. Jesus saw a commotion, people crying, wailing loudly. And I really understand this because I know when my brother died, I can remember, you know, police cars turning up, family members coming up from, you know, my brother who was in the army, he drove down straight away. My dad just left work. And, you know, this happens when people die. People just often descend on your house to help and support you. So Jesus is confronted by people who are deeply, deeply upset. And he went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion? Why all this wailing? Sorry, Jesus? Are you really going to say that? The child is not dead, but asleep. The child is not dead, but asleep." And they laughed at him. You see, that little phrase, "the child is not dead, but asleep," is deeply significant. Because this little girl, she was part of the covenant family of God. They believed in God, Yahweh. And they believed that there was eternal life. That when you die, you don't just die, but your soul goes to be with God. And that's why Jesus says, you know, she's dead, but we know that she's alive with God. But for the people, they could only see the physical reality. They could only see the fact that she is dead. You know, you see this Jesus who's able to see beyond just physical things. He's able to see spiritual things. He's Jesus, the Son of God. And then he does the most amazing thing. He took her by the hand. So she's probably laid out dead. And Jesus says this to the girl. "Little girl, I say to you, get up. Little girl, I say to you, get up." He's saying this to a dead girl. "Get up." Immediately the girl stood up and began to walk. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. You bet. I mean, come on, Mark, you don't have to tell us that they're astonished. I mean, if a girl has just come back to life, we expect them to be astonished. And then he gave strict orders not to tell anyone about this. Okay, so he says to them, don't tell anyone what's gone on. And he told them to give her something to eat. Oh, Jesus is so practical. I love that, isn't it? You know, he's just raised this girl and he's like, just remember to give her something to eat. Okay, she's going to be hungry. Thank you, Jesus. It's amazing. You see, in this story, and this is where I want to end, you discover a Jesus. What type of king? He's the king who's able to heal people. But he's also the king who's able, and Jairus did not realize this until he did this. He's the king who's able to deal with death. And we see as Jesus moves on, he doesn't stick with Jairus, he moves on, and we're going to see that throughout encounter, what Jesus does after this. But all of what he does points to what he does on the cross and the resurrection. You see, Jesus was nailed to the cross. And 3 days later, he was resurrected. Not only can he heal and bring someone back to life, but what he does is he deals with suffering and death fully in those 3 days. And Jesus tells his disciples, he says to them, go tell people what I've done. Go tell them that I died and was raised from the dead. You see, Jesus' resurrection, it wasn't like this little girl's. She came back in the same body. When Jesus came out of the tomb, he was resurrected, a whole new body. And we're going to see in Mark that Jesus does incredible things. He can walk through walls. He can just turn up somewhere in this body. It's a new body. And Jesus tells his disciples, go tell people that there will be a day when all will be raised from the dead. All who know me will be resurrected. And they will be with me in the new creation where there will be no suffering, no pain, no death. The message of Jesus is, all have left home. We've all left a relationship with Jesus, but he's calling us home. And he's calling us to a home that is everlasting. And he says to his disciples, I will be with you. How? By my Spirit. If you know Jesus, his presence is with you. And he says to his disciples, you know, ask for healing in my name. Come to my Father in my name for people to be healed, so that you would taste that amazing future here and now, that you would see people be healed. And I know on numerous occasions at Holland Road, we've seen people be healed. We've seen God do amazing things. But what Jesus doesn't promise, he doesn't promise that everyone will be healed. And we all do die still. But what we discover is that Jesus is able to. And he's able to deal with death. Death, we all face death. What an amazing Jesus. And when there isn't healing, he asks us to trust in him, that he is in control. Like with Jairus, I'm still with you. I'm still with you. And so, I just want to end with this, and I just ask the band to come on up. And you know, it may not be illness, or it may not be someone who you know who's ill. That may not be the crisis that you're facing. Maybe you're facing unemployment. Maybe you are unemployed. Maybe you're facing trouble at school, friendship issues. Maybe at work, things are just not going well. Maybe it is someone who you know who is ill. Maybe they've got cancer. What Jesus is asking of us tonight, what we see in this passage is, he's saying this. Is this crisis, whatever you're facing, do you want to see me at work? Are you wanting to see me at work in the crisis? Because so often we allow the crisis, whatever we're going through, to cast a shadow over Jesus. It snuffs out who he is. Or is Jesus the shadow? Is he the one actually casting shadows over your difficulties? Are you allowing him to take control? And are you trusting that he's with you? It's so worth it. And as you allow Jesus to do that, you discover that he is so worth it. You discover that he's worth it. So I'm going to ask you to do something with me. And that is, just close your eyes. And I just want you to Even just put your hands out and just imagine whatever crisis you're going through in those hands, whether it's someone who you long to see be healed, maybe friendship issues, and just imagine that in your hand. Why don't you just pray with me? Jesus, we thank you that what we see in your life is one who is in control. Even when we think things are lost, even when we get those thoughts of why bother, you know, why bother pray? Would you help us see you? Would you help us see you at work in our lives and in those issues that we're facing? And Lord, would you bring healing where healing is needed? Jesus, we ask this in your name. We come to you, the one who is alive, the one who will come back. And Lord, help us. Help us to seek you daily. Amen.